How I tried to cope. Although we did not know if the magician was dead or alive, chief among our ills now seemed Mord's proxies, reeling across the city in the aftermath of the missile attack. I had so many terrible dreams connected to the proxies, terrible thoughts in those times, and couldn't distinguish which were mine and which were imposed from some other source. For that's the way I felt, that I was not entirely myself. It seemed for a time that the Mord proxies forced all action and everything came out of their machinations. Even Born's rejection of my books became part of the proxies' plan, because I had lost my mind. I was haunted by dreams of the proxies in which they now flew as well, and that the space in the roof above the swimming pool had opened up into a yawning chasm, and the Mord proxies had swooped down into that space to talk to Wick, and that Wick plotted with the proxies to take over the balcony cliffs from me and Born. Drunk stumbling in their own blood murder, Mord proxies growled from fang-filled snouts a language that none had ever heard before, articulated even as they slaughtered, thoughts and desires that had never been expressed in the city, that were beyond even Mord. From the entrails left behind, we tried in vain to divine what they meant. What sense could be made of any of it? Mord had never spoken, except to roar or rage, had said no intelligible word. Yet these emissaries in his image, breaking down walls, smashing through doors to get to the live flesh meat beyond, they spoke continually. They would not or could not stop speaking, sometimes muttered, sometimes huffed out or choral together from deep in their throats. We knew of their passage through the world by this entangled, glottal speech that we could not interpret. No translation existed, and there was no intermediary to explain. So since we could not understand anything but their actions, we resolved to snuff out these proxies, to halt their stream of speech as they desired to halt our own, did not care what phase in Mord's rough dominion they might mark. But mostly, we hid from them, avoided them, tried not to be killed by them. We disguised our scent, disguised our home even more, ventured out less. With most of his clients dead or gone into hiding, it took little to convince Wick to remain behind our barricades. During this time, I would wake in the middle of the night, startled from sleep, with the memory of Mord's giant carious eye shining like an evil sun, replacing the real sun, and shining over my bed, only to find Born instead watching me, in need of comfort, I believed, of someone to talk to. I gave Born what I had to give, even when exhausted, because I never wanted to lose track of him again. I feared that more than anything. I feared that he would slowly merge with the background, as the background became my primary concern, to shore up walls, to place a new barricade at the end of a corridor I now thought might be a security risk, and a pit below. We were afraid of people coming up on us from below, having seen the feral children pop up out of their lair. We could hear sometimes a lazy inquiry, a random digging here and then there, that I thought must be the Mord proxies, perhaps even at rest, not giving a second thought to the likes of us. But not for long, not for long, Wick thought. During Born's visits, he would be in what he called travel mode about half the time, and he glowed a deep icy blue flecked with patches of gold that created star-shaped patterns on the wall. My fireflies had fallen below a level he deemed acceptable. His eyes were only two in number in that mode and had an odd intensity to them. Sometimes Born would adopt a kind of a new bloat position that made him look like a huge fleshy eggplant on its side, his tentacles pulled down over his torso to provide stability. But with more and more frequency, Born would also change shape and color so often during a visit that it was hard to look at him, as if there were some things the human eye was not adapted to see. I didn't know if he was losing control of himself or entering some new phase. I learned not to mind that he just appeared inside my apartment, even though I had to make an appointment to visit him. Even if he'd surprised me untying my shoes after a long day or walking around in my underwear. We couldn't afford to use biotech to secure our apartment doors anymore. There was nothing that valuable for Born to eat. "How was it out there?" I would ask, rather than, why were you out there again? Yet he always came back unscathed. Yet he always told me about his day or some version of it. "What happened in this city?" Born asked once, in a voice like a world-weary old man. I had no answer for him, thinking, I don't know, it just happened. Everything, everywhere, collapsed. We didn't try hard enough. We were preyed upon. We had no discipline. We didn't try the right things at the right time. We cared, but we didn't do. Too many people, too little space. Weighted down, unable to see the way Born saw. Maybe the moored proxies weren't an aberration, but the end product of it all. "It's dead. It's all in ruins. Everyone is defeated." I know a responsible parent would have pushed back, told him that wasn't true. But I'd had yet another hard day on the back of several more, with little sleep. And I couldn't help but laugh, scathing at that. So he'd finally noticed. Some petty part of me rejoiced that he was becoming more like us, or more like me in that moment. "That's just the way it is, Born. Survival isn't pretty. We're trying to survive, do you know what I mean?" An honest question. Despite my worries, Born seemed to have it easier than we did in some ways. We could starve away in the balcony cliffs and he'd just absorb a chair or something to keep on living. "Yes, I know what you mean," he said impatiently, "but it doesn't need to be this way." "So what are you going to do about it?" I meant that almost as a joke or a provocation, but I must admit I was curious. "I'm not sure yet. Let me know when you figured it out. I met an old man today. He was digging a hole."
"Yes?"
"He was digging a hole and talking to me."
"Did he notice what you looked like? And had he been real or a character in a book?"
"No. But he told me he wasn't from here."
"No surprise there. Hardly anyone over 30 was from here."
"The old man told me he was digging for food. But all I saw were roots down there."
"Maybe he was too old. Maybe he was digging his own grave, had the dignity to sense his future and plan for it."
"He also told me you have to give up something to get somewhere. That's what he told me. So that's what I'll have to do if I want to get somewhere."
"Haven't you noticed everyone is out there trying to create their better future? Especially old men digging holes."
"Sarcasm?" he asked.
"Yes." He asked that one-word question now, and so I wasn't sarcastic very often. "Come help me, Born," I said, sobering up, remembering who I was to him, and because I didn't like his jaded tone. "You should help me with the balcony cliffs."
"I guess I could spare an hour here and there," Born said, as if his social calendar was full of appointments.
I just had to come up with a task for him that might keep him occupied and help us at the same time. Maybe keep him out of the clutches of old men digging holes. Most nights now there was some kind of cacophony and a rawness and such a sense of covert movement. So much noise out there and echoes of noise and a keening or growling or the sound of something or someone being killed. That was the sound of a city that no longer believed in one ruler or one version of the future. And indeed, Mord at times would growl in a kind of disgust at this new version of events, and above us, the proxy bears would dig where Mord had laid his head, or maybe it was the magician's men pretending, and that was the other confusion. One side trying to make their kills look like the work of the other side. Although the magician had more luck in this regard, the proxies were not dainty. Another sound in the night, the strangled agony of people dying on the street who had escaped the proxies, but not the poison of their bite. Soon, too, the magician's mutants not only came with harder carapaces, but with their own poison, which shot out through their fingernails in a vain hope of piercing thick bear fur. With these improvements came a shorter but more intense life, their speed unnerving. Bourne coined the term nocturnalia for the way that life now welled up in unexpected ways whenever darkness slid over the city. There had always been a life out there in the blackness that did not include us and that moved to its own rhythm, but added to that now, what made the night both opportunistic and perilous were the others lurking, so many out in it, thinking the night gave them cover. We couldn't interpret these others, hardly knew where they had come from, could not grasp either their allegiances or the eruption of those who worshipped Mord in the aftermath of the magician's failure, who sided with the great bear and chose to give their fealty and foolishly thought this made them immune. Gunfire in the night was the barometer of our desperation, bullets so scarce in the city that each single shot that rang out, whether near or far, signaled the last stand. On nights when we heard more than a dozen, it was difficult to believe we would not be swept away by some inexhaustible wave of slaughter. Lights at night were traps, too, in a way they weren't before. Little pools and points of life, and nothing good could come from investigating. The magician had not returned, but her innovations were a tell, I thought. In her absence, too, myths had grown up around her, new stories as if she had become a martyr. Bourne brought one back to me as if it were valuable salvage. In this story, a strange bird with beautiful plumage had found its way to the city, a very strange bird that had come from far away. It flew around, lost and disoriented, trying to figure out the city, where it was exactly, what it was supposed to do. But it wasn't supposed to do anything. On the second day, someone tried to catch it and broke its wing. The bird got away, kept flying as best as it could. Then a bit of walking biotech caught it, killed it, ate it. Then the magician killed the biotech and used it for parts, and once again, the strange bird flew in the city, but now at the magician's behest, and no one would touch it, for it was the emissary of the magician, and it was clear to everyone why the strange bird had come to the city. Because the magician had willed it, and even if the magician died, her strange bird would live on. The stories about the company building weren't much better. The Mord proxies patrolled the perimeter, and Mord had dug out a place to sleep on its flank, and a kind of refugee stream of bizarre biotech still came out of the damaged places to join the nocturnalia. I did not like to glimpse these half-dead things, most gobbled up by Mord proxies, that crawled when they should have walked or rolled or hobbled. Nor could I stop thinking of the perfect little biotech slaves that had paraded themselves around my special cake in the fancy restaurant. In my mind, they kept spiraling that cake for years as it decayed into black mold and then nothing, and they had to keep trudging around that cake, around and around, singing, until they died in mid-step and their flesh rotted and then faded away, revealing their sad, delicate skeletons, which kept dancing.